What are the top 5 secrets to achieving massive career success? May I share it with you? When you pre-order your copy of my new book, Constructing Your Career, you get a free 25-minute video where I reveal just that. All you have to do is send me proof of purchase. Constructing Your Career shows you how to build an exceptional career in construction via the 12 foundational stages on your greatest project, which of course is you. Are you going to start construction? You're listening to the Constructing You podcast. Hi, I'm Eleanor Mosher, and I'll be sharing the stories of the people behind the projects. You'll get to hear interviews with exceptional leaders and industry titans in the property and construction industry. I don't only want to find out what they do, but also who they are and who they've had to become to achieve what they have. You'll get insights, ideas, and advice that will serve to build your career to reach new heights. Let's go on this growth journey to construct ourselves together. You ready? Hello and welcome back to Constructing You. Project managers, listen up. This episode is for you. I have David Russo, principal and board member of Johnstaff. Johnstaff is a diverse management and delivery practice with offices all across Australasia. And David has had a very interesting career on project delivery. It's really unique to find someone who has had such a diverse experience in it. And of course, he brings this wealth of knowledge and insight, true insight into project management as a profession in the construction industry. We talk about everything from teamwork and what to do when teams aren't performing. That's really interesting, as well as relationships, which by now I have no doubt you know is the cornerstone of your career in construction. And of course, if you loved this episode, then I want to hear from you. Tag me on Instagram at Eleanor Mosher _ and connect with me on LinkedIn, Eleanor Mosher. I love hearing what really shifted within you when you heard this episode. And I want to see you in the Facebook group, Constructing You Podcast. So without any further ado, here's to Constructing You with David Russo. Hello, David, and welcome to Constructing You.
Hi, Eleanor. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. It's great to have you here. Now, before we talk about your distinguished and accomplished career, could you tell us a bit about Johnstaff?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. So Johnstaff's an Australian and New Zealand business, and we're all about trying to, I guess, get the best possible solutions for our clients in both infrastructure or business needs. And the business needs is probably the component that a lot of people don't associate with us. They probably see us as a project management house, but we are, I guess, a more diverse management and delivery practice. So we've got 4 streams of service that we provide, including advisory, project management, cost management, and construction. And one of the things that's really distinguished about us, or we think is anyway, is that those 4 service offerings remain totally independent of design. So we don't provide design services. And the feedback we've had is that independence is really important for our clients, and it's often one of the reasons that they choose Johnstaff. We're focused on getting the best possible solutions for them and not necessarily geared to trying to get a building or facility type solution. It could be a business operational improvement that doesn't necessarily need to inject huge capital costs to build something to solve a perceived problem. We started in 1991, so we're looking forward to our 30th anniversary next year, and proudly built a reputation in social infrastructure type projects and lots of long-term relationships we've built with clients in sort of the health, education, research, aged care and justice sectors. And off that base, we've sort of continued to grow over the last sort of 10 or so years into newer sectors, and that includes transport, pharmaceutical and the commercial sector. We've got offices right across Australia and New Zealand, and we service all of the states and territories across 9 offices. We've delivered over that near 30 years over $45 billion worth of projects. And, of course, you know, our wonderful staff are critical to our success, and we've got some 250 members of what we call the Johnstaff family. We've now got a formal graduate program, which we're really happy that we launched last year. And that helps or will help train and develop sort of the leaders of tomorrow. And I guess the sort of remaining or final comment is that we proudly Australian, New Zealand owned and mostly with a strong employee shareholder base. So again, not a big multinational sort of house sitting behind us. We are the owners of the business working in the business.
No wonder you've had an exemplary career at Johnstaff, but in order for the audience to get to know you really quickly as well, let's lay some fast foundations. You ready?
Absolutely.
Where'd you grow up?
Boulogne.
And where do you live now?
Boulogne.
You did not move far.
I did not move far. I moved away a little bit and then came back closer to the nest, so to speak.
If it works, it works.
What is
your favourite quote?
Well, I thought about this a little bit, and there's something by Magic Johnson, who's a basketball player. I'm not sure if you know him. His quote was, "This is what I do every day. I love coming to work. I never have a bad day." And whilst I can't always, I guess, say I don't have a bad day, I like that as sort of a target to try to implement. And I must admit, I do love my work. And I think that's sort of an important objective or foundational objective of having a successful career, because if you don't love what you're doing, why do it? There's so many options out there for everyone. I think you really need to enjoy what it is that you do for work.
Absolutely. And if you can't do it with passion, why do it at all? And as you said, it is an absolute foundation to having a career that you love. Now, what is one of your superpowers?
Probably that ability to switch off. So when I'm at work, I'm in work mode, but when I get home, I think generally I'm pretty good at just being able to get into family mode and be dad and switch off the work stress and the work elements and, yeah, just be in the moment. I think that's pretty important as well.
That superpower hasn't come up, so I think a few people can learn from that. It's a good one. What is one of your favourite books?
The Undisputed Truth, Mike Tyson's autobiography.
Right, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so Mike Tyson, heavyweight boxer, and it's just a pretty extraordinary story of, you know, I guess overcoming pretty poor and difficult upbringing to be, you know, champion of the world in his chosen field, and then falling off the rails and, you know, whole life spiraling out of control, and then finding a way to, I guess, get back on some sort of more meaningful path for himself and working out what his future was. So I found it really, really interesting to read.
And what a success he did turn out to be. I'll definitely put the link in the show notes for people to get onto. Now, what is one thing you are challenged by right now?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Yeah, COVID.
Unfortunately. So the whole COVID-19 situation and the economy and all that goes with it is my biggest challenge right now. And I guess in my role, the part of that that's the most challenging and the most stressful is the burden of being responsible for lots of people that work for Johnstaff, mm-hmm. and doing everything we can to keep people, as many people employed as possible, and have meaningful work for them to do. So that's the real challenge right at the minute.
I think in 6 months' time, it'll be a completely different landscape as well. It just changes so quickly. But as I've said in other interviews, it's just amazing to see how quickly the construction industry, which is typically quite conservative, has responded to this. And I think everyone's really doing their best, which is fantastic to see.
Yes.
Now, what is one of your favorite achievements to date?
Oh, it's got to be my family. I've got two
that
girls.
Answers.
Obviously a wife and two girls, and yeah, that's the biggest achievement for me.
And what is one of your favourite buildings?
Can I say two?
Of course.
I've probably got a modern and an ancient. So I think the Pantheon in Rome is one of my favourite buildings, and certainly from that historical aspect, I love the Pantheon. And in terms of more modern buildings, the Chrysler building in New York.
Oh, yes. I haven't been to the Chrysler one, but I'm a huge fan of anything Art Deco, so I'm really keen to see that one day. And what is one thing you are learning right now?
I'm right into watching car restoration videos on YouTube. So that's something I'm really loving at the minute.
Are you a car fiend?
I am.
What's your favourite car? I haven't asked that question in Fast Foundations, but I think I can ask you. What is it?
It's got to be something red and Italian. So.
Oh, yes.
Ferrari, Alfa Romeo, Maserati, they're probably the top three.
Oh, yes. I've been in love with Alphas since I was 16.
Yeah.
Maybe inadvertently, because my mum back in Israel, she worked for Alpha for decades. And not that she spoke to me about it, but then one day I came out with this love of Italian cars, and Alfa's my number one. So I've got my eye on a Giulia. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, very nice.
And I hope you get your fast red car too.
Thank you.
Now let's talk about careers before I turn into a cars podcast. You did start off as an engineer, and you don't always see that, the engineering path translating into a principal of an international services firm as a pathway. So can you walk us through your career trajectory to date?
Sure. I always had a view that I wanted to be involved in the building and construction industry. My father was involved in that industry at a trade level and domestic builder level. So I always, from a youngest age, remember sort of going to work with Dad and being involved in being on building sites from being a little kid. And then I guess as I grew, I was exposed to different sides of the industry through my dad. And there was a particular job that I remember going to work with him on. You know, I'd have been sort of mid-years of high school, and I was introduced to a project manager of this particular project we were working on, and I got to talking to him, and then he found me some work experience at an engineering firm. So I did my work experience, but I had some advice from him around getting a background in a technical field of some description before sort of making that transition to management, and sort of told me the importance of understanding what it's like to actually do before you manage. But I always had that management aspect in the back of my mind. So then I went to uni and did engineering with a view to getting into some management aspects. And so I did the combined degree with commerce as well as engineering. And then I worked as a civil and structural engineer for a big international multidisciplinary firm for about 4.5 years, and did all manner of different stereotypical engineering things like designing buildings and designing bridges and sewers and waterways, dams, all sorts of stuff. But it was the management aspects that really appealed to me. And I, even within that role, I guess, found myself more as an internal project manager. So managing projects for that engineering house, making sure that our resourcing was appropriate, that we were billing appropriately, you know, that the jobs we're making, the margin that we hope to make. And I just continued on that path until I thought it was time to explore that dedicated project management role, and looked around at what was available in industry, and then, made the leap. Been there ever since.
And you haven't looked back. What was it that initially drew you from the quite technical side of engineering to the people side of construction and project management?
I think it's about seeing the big picture or the whole picture of a project. I really enjoy that. So from the idea, understanding what the objectives are, what will be a measure of success for a particular project, I guess how a project might leave some sort of legacy, not just that specific element that you might work on as an engineer.
That's a very important meaning of project management. It is about that overarching view and being able to coordinate many different aspects, and then looking back, zooming out in a way, and seeing that's what we've done, which is really exciting. What do you think are some of the key attributes, though, that make engineers excellent project managers? Because I've seen a few come through that career path and they just excel at it.
As have I, and there's a number within Johnstaff as well. I think one of the attributes, and I've said this for a long time, I think good engineers are those that never say something can't be done. So I think good engineers say, when confronted with a problem, you know, let me think about that and I'll work out a solution. And I think project management constantly throws up challenges and problems, and good project managers need to harness the resources that they've got, and that's, you know, all of the various consultants that work with them and technical specialists, client, whoever it may be. But their primary job is to find solutions, and find solutions that meet the objectives of a particular project. So I think it's that never saying it can't be done, but always finding a way to get something done, that translates really well between engineering and project management.
it's really not sufficient for project managers to put something in the too hard basket. And
absolutely not.
You've seen project life cycles from conception through to completion over the decades that you've been working in the industry. What do you think are some of the fundamental predictors of a successful project?
This is where I probably should have spoken to some of my staff that have recently done some study. I know I was helping or involved in a survey that one of our staff members did as part of a master's research thesis, but unfortunately I don't have those results in front of me. But from my experience, I guess some of the things that come to mind are teamwork and relationships. So you can't underestimate the importance of, I guess, harmonious teams in delivering a successful project. And that doesn't mean sort of teams that sing kumbaya by the campfire, but that respectful dialogue, discussion, challenging of each other, the ability to question in a constructive way, celebrate success together, work together to achieve solutions to those difficult problems, I think are really, really important. I think the need for a really clear brief is critically important. And sometimes I think we don't necessarily have a clear brief from a client, and it should be incumbent on the project manager to really work hard with the client to extract that clear brief and put that process in place to make sure that's there before the project proceeds too far. Otherwise, it can go down, I guess, the wrong turn in the road. Constantly maintaining clear communication across the whole team. And probably the last one, and it's one that I think lots of projects often fall into, and it's not through lack of trying to avoid it, but it's the constant challenge of making sure that you have enough budget for the scope that you want to deliver. And it's challenging because you always want to deliver as much as you possibly can for a set amount of money. But at the same time, if you push that envelope too hard, there's likely to be compromises along the way.
What do you say when, like, as you know, in construction, you will have some project teams where there are competing personalities, either they just don't get along on a personal or professional level, and that has its impact on the project outcome. What do you say, or what do you do in those project scenarios? How do you manage that, either as a business or within the project itself?
As far as possible, trying to know your project, whether that be your client, the consultants that may be engaged in that project or whatever, and trying to pick the right team for the right job. And we need to do that both from a technical fit perspective, but as you say, also that personality fit perspective, and they're both really important. Where you don't have the opportunity to do that at the outset, but discover the issues some way down the track in the project, there's a number of different things we've tried. Their success varies by project, and you need to, I guess, not just have one potential solution for dealing with it. But I've done all sorts of things from having, you know, project relationship type workshops. And depending on the size and scale of the project, you can do those in different ways. It could be, you know, an hour around a boardroom table with a cup of coffee and people just having a chat about how they see the project progressing, to more interventional type meetings or workshops where there have been disagreements or personality clashes on a job, through to on really large scale projects, almost what are they called, residential sessions, where you might go away as a group for a couple of days and work out how the project's rules of engagement are going to be implemented. So it's horses for courses. You know, what might work on a $1 billion project obviously needs to be tailored very differently to a $1 million.
Absolutely. Every single project is its own micro business in a way. There's so many different factors that influence the outcome, and the people are definitely one of them. It's so
and
clear.
As I said at the outset, Eleanor, sort of that quote that I have, if people are unhappy, and that could be caused by the relationships or the people they're working with or whatever, you're not going to get the best out of them. So it's about trying to find a way to get people happy. And if you try a number of different strategies and you still can't get there, I think then again, that's the more difficult conversations you need to have as a manager or as a leader with your client to say, look, I don't think this is working. We might need to make some changes to the team.
Sometimes it can be as simple as listening to the grievance or the experience that someone is having on a project.
Absolutely correct. Yes.
Ever wanted to become a renowned expert and become a recognized leader in your organization? Now you can. Eleanor Moshe's exclusive mastermind, Magnify Your Construction Career, is open for enrollment. Email info@eleanormoshe.com today for a consultation to secure your transformative opportunity.
Now, it's clear from your experience that you know project management inside and out, and there are lots of people from the industry from different backgrounds listening to the podcast. So can you paint the picture for us as to what is the real value of client-side project managers to projects, and how can people who choose this career path be more than just a client's mailbox? Because there is that negative connotation in the marketplace.
Yeah, there certainly is. Where I've seen project management add the most value, it's where the project manager and the client build that genuine relationship where the project manager becomes the client's trusted advisor. And that's built on the premise that the client obviously is very good and excels at what their business is, and the project manager is engaged because they know their particular business. So that mutual respect for what each other brings is a really important first step. And then from there, I think some of the things that I've already spoken about when you were asking about the fundamental predictors of success, but it's helping a client articulate that brief. It's about managing consultants, managing design, thinking ahead, not just in the present, about what are the things that could trip this project up, what risks, what issues, what do we need to be thinking about 6 months down the road, not just what we're working on in the here and now. I think they're the things that really distinguish a project manager that adds value, that proactiveness as opposed to the reactive dealing with the, you know, the post-box approach, as you called it, Eleanor.
Absolutely, being proactive and anticipating the client's needs in a sense.
Correct.
It's sort of forming this bridge between the construction and the client's needs, and that's when you can really shape the trajectory of the project and add actual value, because the industry doesn't need more mailboxes. The client's not paying really good money for that. Now, I want to start talking about leadership, and you're at the helm of a very large firm that delivers large and complex and bespoke projects over many different sectors. So can you talk to us about how you lead very different teams with very different personalities and different objectives within the business to ensure successful outcomes for the client, the people, and the project?
That's a big question with lots of elements to it.
I'm good at asking questions.
You are. I guess as a leader and manager, you need to be obviously well organized. You need to understand your own business and the people within that business. And I think you need, to a certain extent, to have what I call battle scars, that bitter pill of experience, to know how to deal with different situations as they arise. And whilst they might not be the same issues that arise every time, there's enough learnings from different experiences you've had to be able to formulate, I guess, a response to that particular issue that may present. And so in doing that, then picking the right teams for the right jobs, I think, is a really key aspect. So teams of project managers that work well together, but also how those project managers fit to the technical complexities of a project, how they fit to the, values and ethics of a client organisation, how they fit to the relationships of particular consultants that we're working on that project, all of those things need to be considered. And I think as that leader and manager, you also need to make sure you remain current, I guess is the right word, with doing project management, not just managing project managers. So certainly one of the things that's important to me is maintaining hands-on involvement in a number of projects, which then gives me that ability to maintain current market knowledge, maintain relationships with key stakeholders across the industry, and be able to speak with some, I guess, level of authority and recent relevance around issues that come up on projects. I think if you are too far removed from the actual doing, becomes, I guess, more difficult to relate to both our staff and our clients when problems come up that they are looking for your advice to try and help them navigate their way through.
I really like what you said about remaining current. That is so relevant because there are people who are in management positions who are applying outdated practices and ways of thinking to modern scenarios, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, you need to absolutely, I guess, move with the times. Might be a bit of a cliche, but yeah, you need to understand what's happening, and the market's constantly evolving in terms of what it can deliver, how it can deliver, where its, you know, key pinch points might be. You know, take in our construction industry, and it's changing probably right at the minute with COVID-19, but you know, the procurement of goods internationally has changed, you know, a lot, certainly in my time in the industry, and that ability to manufacture offshore in a fairly large way and then assemble locally has been a huge change in the industry. And if you don't understand that, and that's just one example, it's really easy to be, I guess, seen as a bit of an industry dinosaur. you know, things like facades, so many are manufactured overseas. More and more we're seeing things like joinery manufacturing overseas, lots of mechanical components, those sorts of things. Understanding that, then understanding what that means in terms of lead times for projects, what that means in terms of, you know, supply chain risk, all of those sorts of things. Again, just using one particular example, are really important.
It's better to be right than righteous in business. So that was a great example. It's very relevant and probably an interesting front to be watching in the industry as things evolve. Now, what sparked my interest? Obviously, I look for exemplary leaders and industry titans to have on my show, was that your biography noted that you deeply value your amazing relationships with industry leaders. I haven't come across that, which was just wonderful. So can you talk to us about how important relationship equity is in project delivery?
I think relationships and the way teams work is critical to project success. And by that, I don't just mean relationships where, you know, people say, oh, Dave's a great guy and he's good to go out and have a coffee with or have a beer with or something like that. I think professional relationships, certainly you need to get along on a personal level, but they need to be founded in trust that you can do the job that you're paid to deliver on. And that track record, I guess, is what I value. If I say I'm going to do something, I make sure I see that through and I deliver on it. And I think that's certainly the basis for my relationships and how they've been built. And I guess like any good thing, it takes a long time to build those. It doesn't just happen, and it's not a flick of the switch either. It's not they weren't there one day and they were the next. It's just something that's evolved over my career. And it's about just maintaining contact. You know, if you form genuine relationships, they should, as that word says, be genuine. They shouldn't just be nurtured when it suits you, when you might be working on a project or targeting a particular project. You should be having those relationships all of the time, that genuine interest in what's happening with that particular person or that particular organization at any point in time, whether you're working with them or not working with them. Again, it's a really important way just of staying market relevant and up to date.
That's a great perspective. It's not about when it suits. It's not about when it's comfortable. It's something that you constantly have to work at. And there's many different ways in which you can stay relevant and stay visible in people's arenas. So, and especially how long it takes. It takes years. It can take the better half of a decade to build a genuine relationship, but it definitely all pays off. I want to discuss leadership in more detail with you. What value do you bring as a leader, and how closely is this aligned with your own core values and beliefs?
I think it's absolutely related to my core values and beliefs, because I don't think you can be a leader and pretend to be someone that you're not. I think you absolutely have to be genuine as to who you are, and whether you're a technical engineer doing something, a manager managing a team, or a leader leading an organisation, you need to be yourself. So I'd say that's sort of number one. I think the thing that I refer to usually is that you should never, as a leader, ask someone to do something that you're not comfortable being able to do or being willing to do yourself. So that leadership by example is something that I find suits my leadership style, or is an important part of my leadership style. And the other aspect of leadership, which is probably one of the more difficult aspects, but again, if you need to be true to yourself, you need to be able to do it, and that's making the tough calls. And we've certainly and unfortunately had to make some tough calls over the last couple of months with the COVID-19 situation. But again, that's what part of the role is, and it's the elements that really play on your mind and you run scenarios over and over. But at the end of the day, you can't ignore those tough decisions, and the tough decisions, I guess, are what ultimately define you as a leader, and they're the things that are probably most visible to the team that you are leading.
There are business owners and other respective leaders listening, and many are facing tough calls right now. So how do you actually make a tough decision? And avoiding it is obviously not the option.
I think you need all the information. So I think knowledge is important. A tough decision should be something that you stew over, because if it was easy, or if you landed at something immediately, it wouldn't, I guess, necessarily be a tough decision. Tough decisions need that, I guess, bouncing around of different scenarios and thinking about things from different perspectives. But I think you need to also be able to remain calm in a crisis. So not, you know, jump at shadows, not worry about what others are doing or thinking. As I say, it's about getting the information you need to make the decision, validating that information for yourself, running different scenarios, and then when you're absolutely sure that you've arrived at the right decision with all of the information that you have at hand, then equally showing that decisiveness and making the decision. And once you've made the decision, you need to be able to, I guess, back it up and stand by the decision that you've made.
As a leader, you can't be constantly changing the answer to the decision either, right? Because that just undermines the authority and it shows you haven't actually done proper due diligence. So it's equally as important sticking to the path and hoping it's the right one, but you'll only know once you make it.
Correct. And I think that's where it's important to have others in a leadership team where you can do the second guessing and challenging of each other. And, you know, at JohnStuff, we do that at board level with my fellow board directors. And I guess that's the place to challenge and run different scenarios and question decisions. But once the decision's made, it absolutely needs to be, one, a united decision, but also a decision that you stick to once that decision is made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely important. I want to distinguish between management and leadership. Management is not leadership. So what can people in management positions do to elevate themselves into a leadership position? So what are these essential attributes which make for this transition?
I think management's a stepping stone to leadership, obviously, but I equally don't think all managers will necessarily become leaders. And I think the leaders that emerge from management ranks are those that are willing to, I guess, make difficult decisions, the ones that are willing to admit mistakes, the ones that understand that respect needs to be earned as opposed to those that demand respect. And I think there's a very significant difference. And I think leadership, as much as there's lots of leadership training and leadership courses and all sorts of things that you can do, there are some attributes to leadership that seem to come more naturally to some people than others. And I think part of that's probably what I was talking about a little earlier. And it's usually the defining piece of leadership, but it's making those difficult human decisions, I think, that often separates leaders from managers.
And not every manager needs to also become a leader. It's like, you know, companies and projects need really, really good managers as well. So it's not underrated.
No.
But like you said, not everyone just has that essence or whatever it is, that key attribute which can elevate them to it maybe faster than others. I just want to circle back on your board position at JohnStuff. Could you talk us through some of the demands or key criteria which is required to fulfill a board position, because it's obviously an exemplary achievement to have in your corporate career. And, you know, it might inspire someone to want to reach for the same.
I think it also goes for leadership, but that board position, it's really about switching off the me part of your brain and thinking about and always having front of mind what is best for the company, what is best for JohnStuff in my case. So all of the decisions we make and all of the things that we need to think about when making decisions have to always have that objective front and center. What is best for John Staff? And then in turn, linking that back to what is John Staff's purpose for being? What's John Staff's strategic plan that we're trying to achieve? It's always got to be about John Staff and not about the me. And even in my role at John Staff, I wear, I guess, two hats. So that board position has to be what is best for John Staff. My principal role at John Staff in the Victorian business, I'm often wearing what's best for the Victorian business of John Staff, not the business as a whole. So, you know, sometimes those two hats that I wear can conflict, but ultimately the board role and that director role needs to, I guess, take priority.
How can people who work on project management but have an itch to explore the business side, how can they marry the two or get the best of both worlds? Because, you know, if you want to scale into leadership positions and achieve, you know, board member positions, you have to have really good business acumen. So how can you get exposure to that from a project management level?
I think it depends on a lot of things, but I think the opportunities are there for those that want to find them. And it goes, again, to some of the recurring themes that we've been talking about. I think part of it's relationships. So, again, the more depth of relationships that you have, the more experience you have with particular clients, probably the more exposure you'll get to that whole life cycle of projects. And then in my experience, the more experienced you are, the more often you get brought into the tent, so to speak, with a client at the early origination phase of a potential project. So you're not talking about some built form solution, but you're talking about a business problem and understand the business side of a client. What is it that's going to either help grow or hinder the growth of a particular organization? What are the metrics underlying why there's some idea to do some sort of project? Understanding what their challenges are that any business has around costs and revenue and staff and all of those sorts of things. So I think we get a bit of a privileged position as project managers to be exposed to that if you're willing to, as I said earlier, put in the hard work and the patience to build relationships and get to a point where you do become that client trusted advisor role and get brought in to have those discussions early. But I think there's also opportunities for people to learn that business acumen and get that other, I guess, side of business exposure by volunteering in all sorts of organisations, and certainly something that I've done and lots of people would have access to. But it's things like, you know, committees of your local sporting club, or it might be a school, local school committee or school board. Might be other sorts of community type groups that are crying out for people with, you know, certain skill sets that might be able to help. So I think those sorts of opportunities exist out there for those that do want to look for them and look for other avenues of getting some exposure to the business side rather than just the project management side.
That's very valuable advice. I mean, if you want something, A, put your hand up, and B, go out there and get it, because like you said, the opportunities are there and it might not be immediately available within the organization, but that doesn't mean it's not available elsewhere. And that just becomes a translatable skill into, I guess, your main career path. So that's a very practical way of marrying the two together. So thank you for sharing that. What's something that you do to ensure that you continue to grow and develop as a leader?
I think before I do, part of why I do is, I think me, like lots of leaders, have self-doubts. You know, how did I get to this position? Do I truly deserve to be where I am? So I certainly have those doubts. And I guess that's what keeps me motivated to continue learning and taking on new challenges. And so as a leader within John Staff, that leadership role has grown. And as that's grown, I've certainly looked at getting more training. So I've done some formal training. We've done informal training within John Staff that we try to build sort of leadership within our business. I think I've aligned myself to certain people that I look up to in industry. And whilst I've never had a formal mentor, it's certainly been people in industry that I would say have mentored me in an informal way. I think that's really important. finding someone or some people that you feel that connection with and whose leadership styles and values align somewhat to your own. And I think reading's important, and certainly nowadays there's lots of content online that's readily available if you want to go out there and look for it.
Absolutely. And every next level demands an upgraded version of you. So the greatest project, as I always say, that you get to work on is you, and the work on that never, ever stops. To wrap up, I have a signature question, and that is, what has been one of the key building blocks, whether in your personal or professional life, that has been imperative to getting you to where you are today?
I think for me, it's always been about never doing something half-baked. So when I do something, I think I do it well, and I give my all to doing a really good job. And I've never done that to, I guess, outwardly seek someone else's approval. But I've always taken the view that if you do something well constantly and consistently, that the right people will notice at the right times. I guess I'm really proud that, you know, I haven't gone job hopping from organisation to organisation. I've moved a couple of times in my career for quite specific reasons, and I've never asked for a promotion or a pay rise, but I've always taken the view that if you do a good job, people will notice and your rewards will come just by being, yeah, consistently good.
It's clear that operating with integrity has been absolutely imperative to getting you to where you are today. And we can only encourage every project manager professional to do the same. So thank you very much, David, for adding this very important and unique discourse to the project management professional. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Eleanor. I was a little nervous to begin with, but it was a really good discussion. So thanks for having me on.
You nailed it.
Thanks for listening. If you loved this episode and know of someone else in property or construction who want to achieve more and succeed in their career by learning from the best, then please share this with them. It also goes a long way if you could take 30 seconds and leave me a 5-star review and tag me on socials sharing your greatest takeaways. Until the next episode, here's to constructing you.